This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Isn't that equal?
From WDET in Detroit, this is Created Equal. I'm Stephen Henderson. With me in the studio is our producer, Carrie Jr. the second. Hey, Carrie.
Good morning, Stephen.
Hey. So we've got another guest in the studio with us as well to talk about the show. Why don't you introduce our wonderful intern here on Created Equal.
Yes, our intern, our assistant producer, Justina Giglio, is joining us in the studio today. Justina, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
How does it feel being this? How does it feel to be in the studio with me and Steven talking on the mic?
It was really cool.
awesome.
And we've got Justina here for a particular reason today. She had a lot to do with putting together the program that we're going to have today. Mm-hmm. And the subject is something that's kind of close to her experiences and her life. We want to talk about this idea of the lockdown generation. Young people who are used to the idea of random drills and preparation for random violence because it's something that they experience in school and other places, and because, of course, we are witness to them having to deal with random violence in a way that many generations before mm-hmm. them would not have known.
Yeah, definitely for me, it's something I never experienced. And we were having this conversation in the station. Justina brought it up, and I was like, you know, that's a good point. This is not only something that they experience uniquely, but this is also something that they're going to have to prepare for, and the generations after them will have to prepare for as well. So, Justina, I think that was a really good idea that you brought this topic up for us. Can you just talk a little bit about, initially, like, your first thoughts when you were thinking about shows for this episodes for this show, why this one came to mind?
I think it's a very prevalent issue for young people, and I think it's always kind of on the back of our mind. Gun violence is something that we've experienced from a very young age. Sandy Hook happened when I was in second grade. Mm. So we've kind of just experienced this progression of active shooter drills and just the increasing levels of active shooter violence in schools. And I thought it was really important to talk about on our show because it's an inequality that young people face. It's something that older people just haven't experienced in their K-12 education.
That's true. And then specifically, we're talking about the trainings, too. Like, it's not just about the experience of having to go through that or hearing about it happening, but also being told that this might happen, right? That anticipation. Can you just talk a little bit about, in your experience, what that felt like for you?
Mm-hmm. So growing up, we always had an active shooter training a couple times a semester. And the more it happened, the safer I felt in school because I felt like I knew what to do when an active shooter came into our building, or if they came into our mm-hmm. building. But it also felt like the target grew bigger. I felt like it would happen more. It was going to happen to me inevitably. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it did. My university, I go to Michigan State, did have an active shooter incident, and students died, students were injured, and are permanently disabled. Mm-hmm. So though it prepared me, it was something that I eventually grew to believe would be inevitable.
Mm. You know, Justina, my son is also a student at Michigan State and was there when the shooting happened. And I can remember, of course, the anxiety that I felt when I heard that it was going on, trying to get hold of him to make sure he was okay and that he was safe. And once I did, the thing that I noticed about him and his reaction, and it changed over time, of course, but was how kind of resolved he was to the idea that this was happening, that there was some shock, but in lots of ways, I think people in your generation have been raised to believe that this will happen, not that it might, that mm-hmm. At some point you will have to confront that kind of random violence.
Yes, 100%. I remember being on the phone with my mom, and I remember thinking, I cannot believe this is happening to me. But also, in the back of my mind, it did seem like eventually, whether it would be at school or in a public place, there will be an instance of active shooter violence.
Hmm. So we want to talk about today this mm-hmm. idea of raising children in an environment where they are given this expectation that random violence will touch their lives. And of course, we really want to thank Justina for all her work getting this ready. We've got really great guests lineup as well. Marissa Ford is a student at Grosse Pointe North High School, and she's group leader at her school's chapter of Students Demand Action, where she organizes events and coordinates with members of the group. We've also got Ed Hubert with us. He's a former educator who wrote a children's book called Hide and Zeek, an activity book for lockdown anxiety. Imagine that, a children's book about lockdowns and preparation for random violence. Wow. We're going to get to it next here on Created Equal. Marissa Ford, it's great to have you here in the studio with us. Welcome to Created Equal.
Hi, good morning.
And Ed Hubert, it's wonderful to have you with us as well. Thanks for joining.
Thank you so much.
So, Marissa, I want to start with you because it's your generation that we're talking about here. And I just want to have you describe what life is like for you at a school like Grosse Pointe North. I have to admit, I grew up here in Detroit and have lived in Metro Detroit for most of my life. I don't know that I think of violence when I think of a school like Grosse Pointe North, but I imagine that for you, that looks different. And the whole frame for these kinds of possibilities just is more urgent than it would have been for me when I was your age.
I mean, I think that's the thing about like the gun violence. It happens in like all, well, it doesn't happen, but we have to fear it in like all schools. We've had like lockdown drills my whole life and stuff. And like there's been like threats and stuff of gun violence where we've had to go into lockdown and they've turned out to be false, but I think that's like the scary thing about it is that it can happen anywhere.
So give me a sense of what this has been like for you over time. Can you remember maybe the first time someone in school mentioned the idea of lockdown? Did you have lockdown drills? Did you practice what you should do if there was an active shooter in the building or other kind of random violence that would happen?
I feel like we've just had lockdown drills, like, as far as, like, I could remember. But, so I can't really remember a specific time since, like, elementary school, I feel like.
Can you remember the first time that happened, the first lockdown drill you were part of? How old you might have been?
I was probably in, like, elementary school and, like, kindergarten or first grade, I don't know.
Wow.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I think that's what's scary about it is that like students and kids and teens of all ages have to practice these or have to fear this, which is, yeah.
So you're a group leader in Students Demand Action. Tell me what that means and tell me what you feel compelled to do as part of that group.
Well, so gun violence, I feel like it's such an epidemic, but it's also a preventable issue, which is why it's such a scary thing. So we work to advocate for like common sense gun laws and gun sets legislation to work to end the epidemic of gun violence. We like felt compelled to like start this group. I feel like just seeing all of the multiple instances of gun violence just like in schools and stuff closer and nearer to like us just made like me and a few other students want to take action to start this.
Yeah. If we're paying attention to the news here locally, you know, there's stories, lots of stories right now about a shooter at a splash pad in Rochester, which is a suburb here in Detroit. This is someone who evidently showed up and just opened fire on the families who were at the splash pad, really injuring quite a few people. and then he took his own life. When you see something like that, as someone your age, as someone who's involved in the way you are in anti-violence in your high school, what goes through your mind?
I feel like it's scary that in like a public place that would happen, but also I feel like, as like you kind of said before, it's like no one was super surprised, and I feel like it's scary that that's becoming normalized. I definitely think that there are like common sense, gun sense, like legislation that could have been, like if we had more limitations on like assault weapons, we could have prevented some of it. But so we kind of work to like advocate for legislation like that.
Have you talked to other students and other students maybe who are involved in your group about what happened in Rochester and what it means for your work at Grosse Pointe North?
Well, I haven't talked about that incident with anyone since we've been out of school. But
you're out of school for the summer, right?
Yeah. I think after other incidents closer to home, we're all like kind of like shocked, like, oh, like we've been to places near that, or like, oh, I know where that is. And that always kind of like inspires us to work harder to like fight for change.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking about the inequality of violence and the inequality of living with the threat of random mass violence, which is something that we as adults are inflicting on our children in this country. We want to hear from you, our listeners, as well during this conversation. Give us a call and let us know, are you a parent, a student, or a teacher who has grown up with this idea of lockdown drills and active shooter training in places like our schools? How does that change your perception of school and other public places? How does it change your perception of things like gun laws and gun possession, the prevalence of guns and gun access in our society? Are there things that you think are different about the generation that is coming of age now in this country because they grew up in this kind of environment? What do those things look like from your point of view? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and either hashtag created equal or at WDET, and we can include your comments in the show that way. Ed Hubert, I want to bring you into the conversation here. You were an educator for a long time, and recently you illustrated and co-wrote Hide and Zeek, a children's book that is meant to help with school lockdown anxiety. It is really hard for me to wrap my mind around the idea that we have a children's book about lockdown drills. Give me an idea of what inspired you to write this.
Well, it's ironic that your intern went to Michigan State, excuse me, because at that night of that shooting, my granddaughter was a senior and was in a complete panic when she called us to tell us that she was going to be in that building the next day. Hmm. And Ted McCoo, the fellow author, we had been working on some children's books. And it was funny. We called one another and said, hey, can you imagine if it's bothering seniors in college that much, what can it be doing to preschool through, let's say, second grade? Mm. These kids are experiencing something for the first time. And believe me, the idea of a lockdown is nothing like a fire drill or a tornado drill. Those are almost like party time compared to a lockdown. And
what do you mean by that? Can you explain what you mean by that distinction?
Because what happens in a, let's say, a fire drill, the kids exit school and they get to talk with their friends and, you know, they can visit. The same thing with a tornado drill. They lock in place, but they can still talk with one another and that type of thing. When you go into a lockdown, you're asking a child to step down into a corner someplace with the lights out, curtains pulled with no noise. And that is a pretty scary situation for young kids. I mean, we taught mostly seniors, and that was a problem with seniors, to keep them quiet. And there are several methods that teachers have come up with to entertain kids when they're locked down in situations, and that's one of the things we address in the book. believe me, with a combined 75 years of teaching with Ted and I, this was unimaginable that we would put a children's book together that would deal with this subject matter. Difficult thing to address.
Yeah. Ed, I wonder if you can talk about how the conversation and the perception of school safety and what's necessary to maintain school safety changed over the time that you were teaching. You taught a long time, and I would imagine that earlier in your career, this looked different.
Oh, it's, you know, it's unimaginable. This goes back to Columbine. when Columbine occurred, previous to that, schools were just considered a safe environment. There wasn't any question as to what, you know, would happen with children when they went to school. After Columbine, there was a complete change in education as far as an awareness that things could happen in a school building that you haven't even conceived of in previous years. I was on a committee after Columbine in my school district trying to figure out how we would do a lockdown. You know, at first we had talked about exiting kids from the school, but you know, there had been instances where fire drills had been pulled and kids were pulled out of school and shot at that point. So that wasn't a possibility. And we went through all kinds of scenarios, even with the FBI involved with it. So that kind of changed the tenor of, you know, the safety issue in schools. Mm-hmm. It's taken seriously. It really is.
And when you were a teacher and had to kind of adapt, I guess, to this idea of lockdown drills and other safety protocols to anticipate things like random violence or mass shootings, what was the transition like for you? How do you make that change?
Well, part of the problem is trying to decide where you're going to place kids. You know, classrooms are open environments, and a lot of the buildings have huge windows and things of that nature that, you know, you never considered before. So finding a place that, you know, is a safe place to put kids, ways that you could have the room shut down in a situation that way very quickly, it took a little bit of doing. We took it pretty seriously. And, you know, through trial and error, you find a way to get the kids out of the way and that type of thing. But the younger the kids are, it's a little bit more difficult, obviously.
Hmm. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking about the lockdown generation, about safety protocols in school. I want to thank Ed Hubert for joining us. We're going to add another expert to the conversation when we get back, Dr. Jacqueline Shieldkraut, who is studying this issue at Rock SUNY in New York, is going to join us and talk about that. We also want to get going with you, the listeners, on the phones and on social. Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. Call and tell us what you make of the lockdown generation, of the risk that our gun laws and other kinds of protocols put our kids at when they're at school and other places of random violence. We'll be right back with more Created Equal.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wild Card, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wild Card wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
We're back with more Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us today. We're talking about the lockdown generation, our young people in America who are growing up in an era where the idea of active shooter drills and other kinds of safety protocols are like wallpaper on the walls in our schools. They are everywhere, and most children are experiencing things like that. That's to say nothing of the children who are experiencing random mass violence incidents. We just saw here in Metro Detroit a random shooting at a splash pad in Rochester that injured a number of people. It seems as though all we do is wait for the next instance of this to happen in a school, in a public place, someplace where our children are at risk. We want to hear from you, the listeners, during this conversation. What do you make of the environment in which we are raising our kids right now and what we're saying to them about violence and its acceptance in America? What do we do to cut down on the number of random mass violence incidents? What do we do to better prepare our children and maybe not traumatize them quite as much as we seem to be with some of these active shooter drills and the idea that it's not a matter of if you'll be part of one of these random acts of violence, it's a question of when. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET, and you can be part of the conversation that way. We've got Marissa Ford with us. She is a student at Grosse Pointe North High School and a group leader at her school's chapter of Students Demand Action, where she organizes events and coordinates with members of the group. I want to introduce another voice to the conversation now. Dr. Jacqueline Shieldkraut is executive director of the Regional Gun Violence Consortium at the Rockefeller Institute of Government. Her research focuses on schools and mass shootings in the United States. Dr. Shieldkraut, welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I want to talk about your work, but I especially want to talk about the ways in which these shootings and the preparation for these shootings actually affect other things with our children, how they shape academic behavior, behavior itself. This idea of the culture of lockdown and the effect it has on who our kids are.
Yeah, so I think it's really important that we kind of start the conversation, with really clear terminology, because there's a lot of different words that are being thrown around as though they're one and the same, and they're not. Huh. Active shooter drill is a blanketed term that is just used to explain any sort of activity in a school that prepares for an active shooter situation. Mm-hmm. And normally when we're talking about active shooter drills, we're thinking about like options-based protocols. One of the most common is run, hide, fight. Of course, in Michigan, as we saw in Oxford, you guys tend to use the Alice protocol. Mm-hmm. And that's very different than a lockdown procedure, okay. Which has very clear steps, can very clearly be practiced. And honestly, when done right, is not different than a fire drill. You're still going to be, going through a procedure and practicing it to build that muscle memory. So I think it's really important to think about, to be really thoughtful about what we're talking about, because those two things have very different impacts on students.
So the teacher we were talking to, though, in the last segment, Ed Huber, made a real distinction between things like fire drills and lockdown drills. He said the steps that get taken and the things that children are asked to do in those drills are very different, and that in his observation, they have different effects on the children. In other words, a lockdown drill has children, in corners, in rooms with the shades drawn and things like that. It's very different than going outside for a fire drill. Do you see that differently than Ed did?
I do, and I think, his points also raised other considerations, but I want to kind of address your question first.
Mm-hmm.
Any procedure for any emergency is going to have different steps, right? We're not going to respond to a tornado the same way that we're going to respond to a fire drill, because a fire means you get out of the building, and a tornado means you get into the building,
okay.
Right? So there's already going to be those differences. So every single emergency is going to warrant a different set of procedures. Now, lockdowns are not tremendously different, if you think about it, than tornadoes or, what older generations dealt with, which were duck and covers, right?
Mm-hmm.
You are getting out of the way of a threat in a specified area. And so, I think that is what's really important to be mindful of is what do we know about an active shooter situation in a school? We know that in most instances, and with very rare exception, these are individuals who have less than 5 minutes before law enforcement show up. So that what they're trying to do is harm as many people as possible in the least amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So for the people who are inside the building, the most important thing that they can do is to build time and space between them and that person who's trying to harm them. So that's why you get into a specified area of the room, because that makes you be out of sight,
right,
where you can't be seen. And if people can't see you, they can't hurt you. What's been really interesting kind of listening to the conversation to this point is you have very different perspectives in a school building right now that have to compete with one another. You have students who really don't know a world where this is not normal. And, that in itself is absolutely horrible, but does speak to a broader issue about how we've failed to address gun violence in our country. But by and large, when you talk to them about procedures, and I've heard your guests say this today, it's like, we know what we're doing, we're prepared to do it, we've been taught what we're supposed to do, and to them it's very matter of fact.
Hmm.
When you talk to somebody who's older, who knows a world where this wasn't, common or an everyday occurrence, it's new, and you have to get their mindset to shift with that conversation.
Yeah.
And that's a lot more difficult to do. So a lot of adults tend to have that sort of pre-99 mentality where this wasn't normal, trying to coexist at a time for, the 2024 mentality where it unfortunately is. And that ends up breeding a lot of tension in the sense that a lot of the anxiety that I've observed in the projects that we've done have not been the students directly. It's the adults who are, manifesting this anxiety, and that's what they're modeling to students who then, intercept that anxiety because they're looking at the adults as their protectors. So if we're confident in what we're doing and we're doing it the right way, students are going to feel confident and empowered. When we start, having anxiety or not trusting the process, or we do things like having very sensorial drills that we know are harmful, then you can't wonder why these kids are traumatized.
Yeah. Marissa Ford, I want to get your reaction to what Dr. Schildkraut is talking about here and the difference in the kinds of drills that take place and the difference in your reaction to those drills. When there are these lockdown drills in your school, how do they make you feel?
I feel like at my school, if we have advanced notice of the lockdown drill, we're usually expecting it. And I feel like that gets rid of a lot of the anxiety for me, at least with a lockdown drill. But when it's when it's something like a threat that's unexpected, then we do tend to be more worried.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely understand how it increases anxiety in younger children with that announcement ringing over the speakers over and over again and stuff. And just you have to be completely silent and stuff. And going back to a fire drill, you're walking outside and you're supposed to be silent, but
nobody is, right?
Yeah. But a lockdown drill, I feel like it just feels so much more serious. I don't know. I think it's because we know that the threat of gun violence is more common. But Yeah. I do think that anxiety sometimes does, like, spread to other drills, though. Like, we had, like, someone, like, pulled the fire alarm at my school last week. And I was nervous then because I was worried that someone pulled the fire alarm to try to, like, get us all into a crowd.
I see.
And I was, like...
Like, your mind goes instantly to the idea of some form of violence.
Yeah, because I've heard of that, like, instance before. And I know we were supposed to... We're supposed to, like, wait in the classroom when the fire alarm's pulled, but we didn't. Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Schildkraut, I wonder if you can talk about this and whether this is kind of a collective trauma that children like Marissa are feeling about all of this, that because they all experience this either in preparation or in reaction to it actually happening, that they share a trauma experience because of it.
You know, I think that's an important question, but I think that, you know, where we have to be careful is, yes, they are all experiencing it in the sense that we know that 98% of public K-12 schools across this country are doing lockdown drills or some form of an equivalent for active shooter preparedness. But what we also know is that those drills are not all being done equally. And so, you know, Marissa's fears and others who share in those same fears are absolutely warranted. Right. I don't know the way that the drill that she's gone through has been conducted. I can only speak to the ones that I've been part of. But, you know, even from just knowing what we hear about, you know, the instances gone wrong that make news headlines where teachers are getting shot by pellet guns and kids are being exposed to crisis actors and mock shooters and sounds of simulated gunfires. You know, we don't go and set a school on fire to practice a fire drill. So it's really unclear why any building thinks that it's a good idea to simulate an active shooter situation to practice a drill. You know, so I think when we're thinking about, you know, what these practices are doing, we have to account for those differences. A lot of it is not what you do, but how you do it. And so, you know, the same way that we're hearing stories about kids being traumatized, we also have a lot of stories about kids being empowered through practice, where we see a lot of positive outcomes like increased emergency preparedness, lower anxiety, lower fear of harm or perceived risk that they will be involved in a shooting. Those are all outcomes we found in our research because we came to the table using trauma-informed principles from the very beginning. Hmm.
Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Call and tell us what you make of the creation of the lockdown generation in our country. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET. Let's start today with Amy in Macomb Township. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stephen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Go ahead.
I'm a former first grade teacher, and I taught first grade for 28 years. I'm getting a little upset here because I've done lockdown drills with my children, and they were drills that we hid in the corner or we all went in the bathroom in the quiet. And I had multiple children crying. We weren't fighting back. We didn't have people attacking us. They don't cry during tornado drills. They don't cry during fire drills. It's part of the reason why I was hired for you. I'm not saying this research is wrong because I'm a huge believer in research. But I think there is a distinction between an active shooter drill and a fire drill and a tornado drill. They're not the same. They're not just sure.
Amy, can you tell us a little more about how the drills would go? Whether children were prepared for it before it happened, the kinds of things that were done to try to, especially with first graders, I mean, those are very young children, to try to put this in some context that removes some of the anxiety or the fear. What was the practice in the school where you worked?
It depends. There were different kinds, just like for fire drills. Sometimes they'd be announced in advance and sometimes they weren't. But in my district, we didn't do any of the fight back. It was just find you had a spot in your classroom where you took all your children. In one building I taught at, we had a large enough bathroom that I could take all my children to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
In another, that was not an option, and we were hiding behind the desk, my teacher desk, in computer workstation, with all my 27 first graders. And the lights were out. In the one building, I could block the windows, and the other building, I couldn't.
Yeah.
And we just waited until they said it was all clear. Someone would come around and check to make sure the doors were locked. They always see that door being rattled.
Yeah. I mean, the variability here, I think, is one of the wild cards. Amy, I really want to thank you for calling in and giving us that, again, really close-up perspective. But Dr. Schildkraut, it does seem like, you know, there is this variation, of course, but that at the root of this, it is introducing into our children's minds the idea of fear and the idea that they should fear these things. Is that not again introducing a trauma to them?
Well, you know, so I think it's a very, pardon the vernacular, it's kind of a loaded question, right? Because I don't want to discredit any of these perspectives. They're absolutely valid. And they're likely due a lot to the variability of what goes on in our country. We don't have national standards for active shooter practices or lockdown drills the same way that we do for fire drills or right. for tornado drills or other things. There's not a lot of guidance out there, you know, and that's something that needs to change. But, you know, I think that the fear is warranted. I'm never going to tell people that it isn't. I'm actually from a community that had a mass shooting, and we were the safest community in America. I grew up in the Parkland area, you know, so I understand that the threat is very real, and having to constantly, you know, think about that and worry about that, you know, absolutely can cause trauma. And things like social media and, you know, media conversations in general, unfortunately, don't help that. You know, to the point that Amy raised, I do just want to speak about something real quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I think that's really important where you can help to offset these negative thoughts or this misunderstanding is training. And I heard this brought up a little bit earlier, and it was talked about like it was a drill, and it's not. Training is where you go through some type of an instruction to learn what you're supposed to do, why you're supposed to do it, and the like. When you go through a drill, it allows you to practice those skills that you are learning in that training. So pairing those two things together actually makes the process a lot smoother. And what our research found is that when you introduce that training, when you're talking to them about, you know, the situation, and listen, we talked to them about lockdown drills. I trained children as young as 3 years old, never used the word active shooter. I said, there's something dangerous in the building and it wants to hurt you. That's it. That's where you leave it. It doesn't. They don't need all of the information per se to know that no matter what's in this building, whether it's somebody with a firearm, whether it's a parental custody dispute, whether it's a dangerous animal, you're going to use the same procedure no matter what the situation calls for. That's what you're going to do. And so when you create those spaces to teach them about that and what they're supposed to do and why they're supposed to do it, like why do we sit in the room with the lights out? Why are we going to be quiet? You know, why are we going to do all of these things? And then you let them ask questions and you talk about it and have a dialogue. That brings that anxiety and it brings the temperature in the room down a lot so that when they get to those drills, they feel more confident.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we need to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Marissa Ford from Grosse Pointe North High School and Dr. Jacqueline Schildkraut from the Regional Gun Violence Consortium at Rockefeller Institute of Government. We'll also continue to hear from you, the listeners, on the phones and on social. If you want to join us, 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. We'll be right back. This is Created Equal, and we're talking about the lockdown generation, children who've grown up with the idea that random mass violence is not just possible, but likely in their schools and other public places. The question is whether these drills are nulling them, kind of numbing them, I suppose, to the idea of this violence. Is it having other effects on childhood behavior and perceptions? We want to hear from you on the phones about that. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Created Equal, or at WDET. We've also got two great guests with us. Marissa Ford is a student at Grosse Pointe North High School, a group leader at her school's chapter of Students Demand Action. We also have Dr. Jacqueline Shieldkraut with us. She's the executive director of the Regional Gun Violence Consortium, the Rockefeller Institute of Government. Let's go back to the phones here. Jeff in Macomb County, you're up next. Jeff, what's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to offer, I've been in special education for 33 years and as a paraprofessional, and I've had the opportunity to speak about this on our Capitol steps in Lansing, and I also presented to Joe Biden's gun violence prevention team at the White House. And the perspective that I offer is special education students. In Michigan, we go from 3 to 26. And there are obviously mobility issues, classrooms that have 3 and 4, 5 wheelchairs in a classroom, and there's 2 staff. If there's an evacuation process, how are 2 staff supposed to get that many wheelchairs out or other students that have mobility issues? Also, there is the intellectual disabilities. So when we're talking about, and I'm so glad that other guests have brought this up about not equating fire drills with this. I mean, these are very different. And in special education, it's even more different because of everything that you're dealing with, both intellectually and with mobility issues. This doesn't get talked about a lot.
Yeah.
When they're talking about elementary students, imagine having a classroom of some special education classrooms have 15 students with varying disabilities, trying to keep them quiet in a time like that when you're, it just doesn't get talked about very much.
Yeah.
When I spoke, go ahead.
Yeah, you go ahead.
I was just going to say when I spoke in Lansing on the steps, afterwards, a mother came up to me with her son who has autism, and she was in tears, and this was completely unexpected for me. I had it was a very emotional moment. And she thanked me from the bottom of her heart, and her son was next to her saying thank you as well for speaking up on behalf of special needs students in these types of areas, because it just isn't talked about.
Jeff, I really appreciate your call, and I love that you have this kind of perspective to share with the rest of our listeners. Dr. Shieldkraut, I want to give you a chance to answer Jeff's questions here.
I think he raises a very important point. Historically, schools have prepared for the broader mass without thinking about those who may need extra assistance. This is certainly a conversation that we've been engaged in as well. I would point your listeners, if they're looking for resources, to the program called Especially Safe from Safe and Sound Schools, which is resources and tools that schools can use as they're planning for a host of emergencies, not just, internal threats, to ensure that students with special needs are receiving the resources that they need to successfully be able to participate in a response, or at least to stay safe.
Jeff, again, really appreciate the call and the perspective. Let's go to Robin in Detroit. Robin, welcome to the show.
Yes. Oh, wow. Thank you, Steve. Oh, man. Thank you. It's very seldom when I hear somebody my color on the radio station. For real. I was wondering. But listen, though, on that note, I've always wondered, you know, why is it that, you know, I'm not playing the race card, but why is it that white people want to sympathize with these kids, you know, like in Detroit, they have like clear see-through book bags, you know, and that, you know, that's what you have to have when you go to school, you know, so they can see what's in your, you know, it's not offending nobody or making a person feel like they're a criminal or whatever. It's keeping people safe. And then why don't they have metal detectors, you know, Steve? Okay, because white people always want to say, oh, that's making my child feel like a criminal to have go through metal detectors. Or that makes my child feel so, you know, picked on for her to have a clear book bag. You know, that's taking over her privacy. Okay, your child privacy, but for another child and family, that could be safety. Yeah. Don't nobody, when it comes down to black people in our neighborhood in Detroit, where we lived all our lives before our city became gentrified, you know, racist gentrified, however you want to put it. We didn't have no problem with our kids having a clear book bag.
Look, I'm Robin, I really appreciate the call, and I want to say that, look, when I grew up here in the city in the 1970s and the 80s, this whole school violence thing in Detroit schools was a big deal, and you're right. The things that were done, installing metal detectors, clear backpacks, all kinds of other protocols were not seen in quite the same light as what we are talking about in mostly suburban districts now, which is where we see these mass shootings. Dr. Schildkraut, can you talk about that distinction? Why we think of this so differently than what African-American schools and African-American communities faced for so long in terms of school violence?
You know, I just want to start by saying she's not wrong. And, you know, her perspective is incredibly valid because we do talk about different communities very differently. Yes. I think, you know, where the not consideration, because it is different. It's largely perceptual, right? As she said, one person's safety is another person's not safety. Mm-hmm. But when you're looking at school districts in urban areas where they have historically had these things, right? They have always had metal detectors. They have always had law enforcement. They've always had these things. That becomes the norm, so to speak, right? This is what we expect. This is how we know we're keeping it safe. This is the expectations that have been set. When you look at suburban schools who implement the same thing, largely in response to an incredibly rare phenomenon like school-based mass shootings, then that is a different shift in mindset, right? You know, I sat in a school district that was very well off, you know, incredibly white after the Parkland shooting, and they had the same conversation about clear backpacks. And aside from me telling them that that was not going to keep guns out of school, you know, my question to them was, do you understand the message that you're telling students where one day they don't have this and the next day they do? What you're now telling them is either you don't think that the school is safe or you don't trust them. And so it changes mindsets when you don't have something one day and you do the next, particularly when it's done in a very reactionary manner rather than being proactive towards safety.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Jacqueline Schildkraut, it was really great to have you here for this conversation about the lockdown generation and random mass violence. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Marissa Ford, it was wonderful to have you here in our studio as well. Good luck next year at Grosse Pointe North High School.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, Carrie and Justina turned out about the way that we wanted it, didn't it?
I think so. I think we got an interesting perspective from Schildkraut. We a very unconventional approach with our author, Ed Hubert, too. And thank you, of course, to Marissa for sharing her perspective on this as well. I do think there was something interesting that Schildkraut brought about the changing in the mindset being like a really crucial a factor in how this affects the community that's being impacted by, whether that's the security measures or whether that's the drills. But yeah, we learned a lot more about that, especially as a generation that doesn't experience it regularly. Yeah.
Justina is a member of this generation. What did you think of that conversation?
I think it was really helpful to get those different perspectives from a researcher and also personal testimonies to see how the different standards across the country and how active shooter preparedness can differ and can have different impacts on students. Yeah. It was good seeing how my research all came together, I guess.
Yeah.
Did this achieve what you had hoped when you envisioned the show?
I think so.
All right.
We got a good conversation.
All right. I'm going to count that as a win.
Awesome.
Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lines. Engineering is by Nate Bender. Audio editing is by Connor Anderson. And the music is by Sam Bobian. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.